Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today.
Ron, what do you have planned for us today?
Well, British guy, on the show today, Jason Dowd and myself get aboard the train for a mini Horror Express. Jason has an update on a story that he told us at Christmas time. Angela from Texas tells us two stories from Haiti that were passed down from her father's father's father.
That's a lot of fathers.
Yes, it is. We also have a classic science fiction short story called Spoken For from the July 1955 issue of Galaxy Magazine. I know. And it all begins with this 5-minute mystery.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Truth and Euphemisms. Have you ever heard this before? Water flows uphill towards money. It's a saying from the American West as quoted by Ivan Duig while in the Cadillac Desert in 1886. What does it mean? Well, let's listen to today's story.
It is late afternoon in the sheriff's office at the old City Hall building, which also serves as county seat and police headquarters for a group of small northwestern towns.
I tell you, Charlie, that air old trout down by the railroad bridge made a fool out of me for the last time.
Think he'll take that new fly, huh,
Sheriff? Ain't a fish alive could turn down this spotted hackle I tied on last night. As soon as the sun gets a little lower in the sky, I'm gonna...
Hello. Yes, it's police headquarters. What? Down by the river? I'll tell the sheriff right away.
Hey, what's the trouble, Charlie? You look a little peaked there. What's the matter?
It's them two city fellas. They was fishing out behind the old Johnson farm. Now one of them's dead.
I left Uncle Bill's body just the way I found it, Sheriff. My name is Harold Kendall. His name was Olson.
Yeah, looks like he tripped on the roots at the edge of this steep bank, smashed his head against them rocks down by the water.
I can't believe Uncle Bill is really dead.
Yeah, well, ain't no use letting the body hang there by its feet. Doc Simpson, the coroner, is on his way out here. Now, easy, Charlie. Yep, careful them there roots.
Looks of this blood all over his face and on his shirt, he must have skinned himself up pretty bad.
Nope. All the blood come from this one gash here inside of his head. Ooh. Hey, you say this man was your uncle?
Yes, I'm what you might call his favorite nephew. Mm. He was a bachelor. Didn't like most of his relatives.
Yeah, where was you when he fell?
Across the river, about 50 yards up. You can see the place from here. When I saw Uncle Bill fall...
Yeah, you saw him fall.
Yes, I didn't think it was serious at first. Uncle Bill was such a good fisherman. He was getting ready to cast his line. He walked up to the edge of the bank and...
Let's see... Well, that'd put his back to the sun.
That's right. Then before he could cast, he seemed to stumble and fall forward. After he fell, he just hung there with his feet tangled in the roots and his head against that sharp rock where
well, you were so careful to put it. You're under arrest, Kendall, for murder.
How does the sheriff know it was deliberate murder? Do you know the clue? We'll have the answer in a moment, but first...
Okay, I have no doubt that this guy killed his favorite uncle. And while we're not given the reason or the means, opportunity surely does abound. Were you able to catch the inconsistencies in this story? Neither was I. But I do know this much. Water flows uphill towards money. What does that mean? Well, let's see.
Now for the solution to our mystery.
But I told you exactly what happened.
Keep your eye on him, Charlie.
You seem awful sure this fella done it, Sheriff. I don't see how you...
Well, he lied to us twice, Charlie. And the way I figure, he stands to inherit some money from that uncle of his. That is, providing he got away with this here murder, which he didn't. It was easy enough for him to hit his uncle on the head with a rock and then rig his feet in them roots to look like he tripped and fell. But he made two mistakes. The first was when he told us his uncle was a good fisherman. No good fisherman would walk up to a stream with his back to the sun and his shadow falling on the water he intended to fish in. When he told us his uncle died hanging head down, I knew he was lying. There's blood all over his uncle's face and shirt. And blood don't run uphill any more than that there river does.
Now you get it, right? He killed his uncle for his inheritance. It has to be. After all, he must have built up a relationship with his uncle to become the favorite nephew. So in this case, the water flowed uphill towards the nephew. See? Okay, I know it's weak, but it was entertaining. This mystery was brought to you by Truth and Euphemisms. Say I received this email from Brian Kano from Austin, Texas. Brian writes, "Hey Ron, I love the podcast, and my favorite segments are A Moment in Time and the OTR commercials. I can't get enough history, and both of these really hit home, reminding us what life was like before social media swallowed us whole. People could react to what was happening in their own homes, but really had to think about what they would do or say about it. Letters to the editor had to be well thought out and concise in order to get into print. But your voice was heard. Here is to simpler times and to you for reminding us of our past. Brian Kano, Austin, Texas." I love how you think, Brian. You hit the nail on the head as to why I play the old stuff. We are a good people, but we have lost a lot in how we communicate with each other. I wonder what our president's approval rating would have been in the 1940s. Twitter didn't exist back then, and the Russians were one of our allies. Just a thought. Thank you for your great comment, Brian. I really do appreciate it. Last week I told you that we now can be heard on public radio, and people were concerned that I had moved and wanted to know how to continue listening to the podcast. Nothing has changed. We were just added to the Radio Public lineup. It's just one more place that you can find the show. There's so many now, I can't even keep track. The next big target I have is Pandora. They are now supporting podcasts. I'll keep you posted on that. Now, normally I would pass the show off to Gladys Goodies for their spot at this point. Today, we have something special planned, so stay tuned. All I have to say at this point is, here are your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our first set of stories come from Haiti. Well, in a roundabout way. Angela Embry from Irving, Texas, sent us this email. "Hello, Ron. I listen to the show every week and tell everyone I can about it. I hope that helps. Everyone I have ever told say they love it once they've heard it. I have stories that I want to tell on your show that were told to me by my mother, who heard it from her mother. We've been in the United States for 3 generations now, and these stories traveled with us. Some of them are very scary, and I don't know if you would be interested. Angela." Well, I wrote her back and basically said I would love to hear them, and that we both can decide if they should be told on the show. I told her to give me a sample, and she sent these in. Here is our first story from Angela. "My great-great-grandfather had zombies. He was a wealthy man, and he used them to work in the fields. To make them, he had a voodoo priest perform the transition. After being buried, they would be pulled out of the ground as shells of what they once were. My mother taught me how to tell if somebody is a zombie or not. It's all in the eyes, she said. I can't remember exactly what all she told me, only that there is an emptiness in there. They mindlessly walk around doing their master's bidding. I believe I've seen some walking around while I was growing up, but that may have only been in my dreams. My great-grandfather had a lot of them. They would work them in the fields as slaves to their master, but sometimes something would cause the voodoo magic to wear off. It was usually caused by an encounter with a past loved one or something that triggered a very powerful past memory. One of my great-great-grandfather's zombies had something like this happen to him. He was working when the daughter of the plantation foreman decided to go out and play in the fields. The zombie became aware, walked up to the little girl, and asked where her father was. She pointed to the plantation home. The zombie politely thanked the girl, walked to the home, and tried to kill my great-great-grandfather. My great-grandmother was there, and she told my mother this story quite a few times. She said that she saw her grandfather stop the zombie from killing him by cutting off his head, right in front of her. If you don't believe this story, think about this. A group of American researchers came to Haiti to investigate zombies. Apparently, there is an herb that they give these people that makes them quite paralyzed and causes massive brain damage. These people become vegetables and are only able to perform simple tasks like field labor. The voodoo priests bury them in light soil so they can still breathe and pulls them out a couple days later as zombies. This is a fact, and to me, one that is shameful. Some have said that they only perform this practice on convicted criminals. One can only hope. Here is Angela's second story. Do you believe in werewolves? They aren't really what you think. The Creole translations are usually winged monsters. However, they can be half wolf, half bird, or any animal for that matter. The bottom line is that the werewolf just means that they practice the evil art of voodoo. They wear the skin of an animal and kill during the night. There have been many men who have been lynched when they were found out to be werewolves. Here is another family tale. This is a story about a werewolf that stole a newborn baby in the middle of the night. These creatures take newborns because they feed on their innocence. One night, on my family's plantation, one of these werewolves, or winged monsters, entered the house and scooped up my great-grandmother's sister. She had only been born 3 days before. Crying woke up the family, and as they ran outside towards the noise, all they saw was the winged creature's silhouette against the moon, flying into the darkness. The foreman, who was also the child's uncle, decided to go and rescue the baby before it was eaten. He was able to find the house of the werewolf. He walked around the place and investigated. He came to the back porch and found that the skin of the werewolf was left out. He poured salt on it and it shriveled away. Without his skin, the werewolf didn't stand a chance against the hero. He broke into the hut, killed the beast while it was in its human form, and returned the baby to our family. I have many more of these stories if you'd like to hear them. These are two of the tamest of the lot. I hope that you can use them. Angela Embry, Irving, Texas. Well, as you just heard, Angela, I used both of your stories that you sent in. I only gently edited them to make them a bit easier to read. I hope you do share more of your family's stories. They truly are amazing. I've done a bit of research on voodoo mythology myself, and what you've said lines up right with what I have uncovered. Although I must admit, the werewolf concept is both new and frightening to me. Thank you for sharing, and please do send in some more. Do you want to hear your stories on Ron's Amazing Stories? head to the main website and click on the story submission banner. Fill in the form, and the next thing you know, you'll be hearing your stories on the show. Don't want to write your story? That's okay. Leave your contact information, and I'll get back to you, and we'll write your story together. Either way, we all want to hear your story. We have an odd little story today. It comes from the July 1955 issue of Galaxy Magazine. It tells a dramatic story of a man who finds himself lost on the moon of Ganymede. He's looking for his family and finds a young woman who tries to help him. She, in turn, falls in love while they unravel his tale. It is titled Spoken For, and it was written by William Morrison.
Spoken For by William Morrison. He was lost. Anyone could see that. But she had no idea how entirely lost he was, nor why. Half of Jupiter's great disk and most of the other moons were below the horizon when the man stepped out of the airplane and changed her life. As far as Carol Marsh was concerned, he was ordinary enough in appearance, and she wasn't ordinarily attracted to ordinary men. He was slightly over medium height. His features were not quite regular, and he had a deep tan over what had started out as a sunburn, so that she decided he had misjudged the strength of the sun on some planet with a thin atmosphere. She frowned as she watched him look around. She was annoyed by the fact that it took him almost a minute to get his bearings and realize that she was, first, a human being, and second, a girl well worth a man's attention. Even the troubled expression in his eyes was something she held against him. A man shouldn't look troubled. A man should be confident, self-assured in a manner that also assures the girl he spoke to. She remembered back on Earth, John Burr had been completely self-assured. It was startling to realize that it was with this newcomer, whose appearance she had every reason to dislike, that she had fallen suddenly and completely in love, as suddenly and completely as if she had fallen off a cliff. "I'm looking for some people," he said, "but I suppose..." His very voice was ill at ease, and that was something else she should have held against him, and against herself. She had always resented men whose voices betrayed their lack of confidence. "I suppose it's no use," he went on. "I'd recognize the house." "Who are the people you're looking for?" He took out a wallet, and from it drew a stereo picture. Two children, a boy and a girl, were standing with a smiling young woman in front of a sturdy, old-fashioned plastic house. Their clothes were out of fashion by a year or so, but that depended on where you were. Mars, for instance, was always 3 years behind Earth. Here on Ganymede, on the other hand, you might even be ahead of Earth in some respects. As Carol's eyes lifted to him, she saw him staring at the picture with such longing that she at once knew herself for a fool. "They're his wife and children," she thought. "He's trying to find them. And I had to fall in love with him at first sight." His eyes were on her now, and she said, "I'm sorry. I've never seen them. Have you lived around here long?" "5 years." "Then this can't be the place." He stood there irresolutely and started to turn slowly away without even a word of thanks to her. "My father may have heard about them," said Carol, knowing herself for a fool again. Past experience, she told herself ruefully, had taught her nothing. The thing to do was to let him go and forget him as quickly as possible, before she learned anything about him, before her feeling for him could become anything more than an irrational, momentary impulse. The stronger the bonds of knowledge and interest between them, the more painful they would be to break. And the breaking was inevitable. The house where she and her father lived was a simple, dome-shaped building, its walls and furniture both made of a silicon plastic whose raw materials had come from the ground on which it stood. There were rugs and draperies of a slightly different composition, woven on the all-purpose household helper that her father had bought before leaving Earth. They lived comfortably enough, she thought, as she led the man in. But he hardly noticed the house or anything in it. When they reached the library, her father looked up from the book he was reading. Only then did the man display interest. The book was a favorite of her father's, and it made him unhappy to cut his reading short. Nevertheless, he turned off the projector, stood up and said, "Yes, Carol?"
"This man is looking for some friends of his, Dad. I thought you might be able to help him."
She held out the picture, and to her relief, her father stared at it instead of her. Sometimes he was a little too shrewd. If she was making a fool of herself, there was no need for him to know it. He could be a sardonic man, and he did not suffer fools gladly, even in his own family. He was of the opinion that she had used up her quota of foolishness with John Burr. He was shaking his head. "Sorry, I've never seen them. Are you sure they live around here?"
"No," said the man, "I'm not sure. I'm not sure of anything except that they're my wife and kids, and I've got to find them."
"Have you checked at the district office?"
"I did that first. They couldn't help me, but they said their records weren't complete yet."
"They're complete enough, I should think. Maybe they don't list every prospector who wanders around without settling down, but they wouldn't be likely to miss a woman and two children. I'm afraid that you're wasting your time looking on Ganymede." The man's face clouded. "It wasn't a waste of my time," he said. "I've got nothing else to do with it. And I have to find them. They need me."
Mr. Marsh looked away from the man to his daughter, and Carol was a little slow in avoiding his eyes.
"I see," he said, and she had an idea of what he meant by that. He saw too much. If he knew, there was nothing she could do about it. She said,
"Perhaps, Mr.—"
She paused, and the man said dully,
"Callender. Perhaps, if Mr. Callender would have dinner with us and tell us a little more, we'd be able to help."
"Not a bad idea, Carol. We should know a little more." Carol selected a dinner and pressed the button that would start its preparation. Her father said casually, "You are a stranger to Ganymede, aren't you, Mr. Callender?"
"I'm not sure of that," said the man.
Her father's eyebrows went up. Carol said,
"But you do come from one of Jupiter's moons." "I can't remember which one. There are a lot of things that my memory's hazy about. I can't even recall the name of the company I worked for as an engineer." "That may not be so strange. I find difficulty remembering the school where I taught on Earth. PS 654, wasn't it, Daddy?"
"PS 634, Mr. Marsh corrected briefly.
"You see," she said, "do you remember your wife's name and the names of your children?"
"I wouldn't forget them," he said. "My wife's name is Mona." He stared at the wall for a moment, his face without expression. "I can still see the way she looked when I left to undergo treatment. Paul was, let's see, he must be about 9, maybe 10 by this time. And Wilma was 6 or 7. I remember how scared she was the time she found a harmless little phytopod. She thought it was going to bite her."
"Phytopod?" said Carol. "We don't have them around here. What do they look like?"
"They're small and furry and have 2 feet that look like roots. When they stand still, you're likely to mistake them for plants."
"Do you recall some things?" said Carol.
"Little things that don't tell me where to look. I remember the time we went on a picnic. I don't recall how many moons there were in the sky, and the ground began to shake. It didn't do any damage, but Wilma was terrified. Paul took it in his stride, though."
"There aren't any earthquakes on Ganymede," said her father. "If your memory of that is correct, you're looking in the wrong place."
"I suppose so," he said. "But what's the right place?"
"Perhaps, if you thought of a few more incidents, we might be able to figure it out. It's the little things you don't forget that can be most helpful." What nonsense, thought Carol, although she kept the thought to herself. The little things can be the most harmful. They keep the pain, and the memory of the pain, alive and vivid. She remembered little things about John all too well. The careless way he wore his clothes, and the way he combed his hair, the cigarettes he smoked, and the food he liked to eat, and the stupid way she had let herself fall in love with him. She hadn't even had the excuse of its happening suddenly, as it had now. She had begun to love John as she had come to know him, disregarding all the evidence of his selfishness, of his genuine inability to care for anyone else than John Burr. Unaware of what was going on in her mind, Callender was saying, with somewhat more animation than he had previously shown, "I think you're right, Mr. Marsh. I've kept my troubles too much to myself. Maybe you can't actually do anything for me, but it wouldn't hurt me to talk. I should have done my talking long ago, when they found me." "Where did they find you?" asked her father. "And what did you mean before, when you say you're not sure of anything?" "They picked me up in a lifeboat drifting someplace between Mars and Jupiter. The motor was off, but the power pile was working, and the air purifying equipment was on. I was apparently hibernating. I might have been that way for 6 months or a year."
"And you don't remember?" said Carol. "There's plenty I don't remember, but as I've said, my memory isn't completely blank. My wife and I and the kids had settled down in a new colony. Exactly where it was is one of the things I forget. I believe now that it wasn't Ganymede. Maybe it was some other moon of Jupiter's. Anyway, I seem to recall having some trouble with my health and being taken into an interplanetary hospital ship for treatment. L treatment, they called it. That's where they put me to sleep. What happened after that, I can only guess. The ship must have been involved in some accident. I must have been transferred to the lifeboat."
"Alone?" asked Carol's father.
"No, there were two other patients with me. They were found dead. I was the only one left alive. The bodies of the crew members who transferred us weren't found at all. They might have gone back for more patients and then been unable to get away again."
"Who found your lifeboat?"
"The crew of a freighter who spotted it drifting across the space lane. They took me on board and revived me. But they were in a hurry and didn't have much time to stay and investigate." Mr. Marsh was thoughtful and silent. Carol asked, "Weren't there any records in the lifeboat?"
"Nobody thought of that, at least not in the beginning. At first, when I regained consciousness, my mind was almost a complete blank. Then I began to remember things, but not enough. I couldn't recall where the colony had been. And after I had recovered enough to be able to get around, I began looking for my wife and children. I haven't come across a trace of them, although I've been on many worlds." The food had long been ready and waiting. Until now, no one had thought of getting it. He stared as if through the wall at Carol after she had set dishes before him, had to remind him of their presence. When he did eat, it was automatically, without enjoyment. Afterward, her father surprised Carol by saying, "Why not stay with us overnight, Mr. Callender? We have an extra room, and tomorrow I'll be able to give you a little helpful information." The man's eyes came alive.
"You're serious? You think that from what I told you, you'll be able to guess where I came from?"
"I use the word might. Don't get your hopes up too much." His face fell again.
"Thanks for warning me," he said in a flat tone.
When, later on, he had gone to his room, Carol said,
"Dad, do you really think you can help him?"
"That depends on your idea of help. Why are you so interested in him? Perhaps you've fallen in love with him, Carol?"
"I think so."
"Under the circumstances, that would be completely idiotic. Would there be any sense in asking why you fell in love with him?"
"Well, he looks so lost. I think it's maternal."
"As genuine a case of grand passion as I've ever encountered," he said dryly. "Almost as genuine as your previous experience." Carol flushed.
"He isn't like John.
Fortunately, you're right. Burr was essentially a selfish baby. I can't imagine him spending his life looking for a wife and children he had lost. In future, Carol, if you must fall in love at all, do it suddenly. You choose much better that way.
Yes, I know, she said, except for the fact that the wife and children may interfere. But don't worry, Dad. This time I'm not quitting my job and moving several million miles away to try to forget.
There'll be no need for that. His face took on a troubled expression. You'll have to face your problem right here.
You haven't answered my questions, said Carol. Do you really think you can help him?
That isn't an easy one to answer. We'll have to prepare him for the shock, Carol. A first-class shock. That's why I wanted to be sure you were in love with him. It may make things easier for him to stand.
What things?
Her father hesitated. Have you ever heard of the L treatment he mentioned? She shook her head. I thought not, Carol, he said. His voice was unexpectedly full of compassion. You're going to have a very sick man on your hands. It won't be pleasant for either you or me, and it's going to be horrible for him. But it must be gone through. He must be told.
For heaven's sake, what is it?
The L in L treatment, he said slowly, stands for longevity. That was what he was treated for. But you see now why it was found to be dangerous and discontinued. The reason you never heard of it is that it was developed and discarded 200 years ago. Callender wasn't adrift in space for a year or two, as he thinks. He was adrift for 2 centuries.
No! Oh, no!
That's why the clothes in those pictures seemed odd. They've been in style and out again 6 times, with slight changes every time. That is why, furthermore, he can't find his wife and children on any of Jupiter's moons. The moons were first colonized 90 years ago.
But he says...
He'll never see his wife and children again. They've lived their lives and died and been buried in the past. He should have died with them in his own time and not lived in ours.
No, said Carol, or I'd never have known him.
She was white and trembling, and her father pulled her to him and let her head rest on his shoulder. Mr. Marsh said, Perhaps you're right. I don't know. Anyway, he'll have to be told. And for your sake, I'd better do the telling. Carol was silent, and they both thought of the sleeping man who didn't know that his old life had ended and that a new life was to begin so painfully in the morning.
I thought that was a pretty darn good story, way ahead of its time in 1955. It was written by William Morrison, whose legal name was Joseph Samashian. He was a prolific author and scientist who primarily wrote science fiction and comic books. He wrote a number of science fiction works under the pseudonym William Morrison, including 2 novels published in Startling Stories. And now, prepare yourself for a mini horror express with Jason Dowd.
As we pull into Death Station.
Welcome aboard this mini edition of the Horror Express. The conductor isn't here for this trip. Actually, this train is on its way to Florida to pick him up, and drop Jason Dowd off. Well, drop is kind of a strong word. It will be more of a throw mama from the train kind of moment. Jason contacted me to tell me that he had a story he wanted to tell us, so I arranged to meet up with him in Big Timber, Montana. This is a small mountain town where the Rocky Mountains and the plains meet. It sits between Bozeman and Billings and has a population of approximately 653 souls. With hotels dating back to the 1800s and an old-fashioned soda fountain, think of this as a visit back in time. Jason never told me why we were meeting here, except to say that South Spirit Airlines has a limited number of ghost town airports to choose from. So, let's join Jason, already seated in car 13, and hear what he has to tell us. Hey, Jason, it's great to have you back on the train. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to be back on the train.
It is. Hey, did you notice that the conductor wasn't here?
No, I didn't.
You know why?
Why?
He's down in Florida, getting some sun.
Oh, I hope he brought a lot of the sunscreen, because he's a little pasty.
He is. He's one pasty-looking dude. Well, you know he's dead, so...
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm surprised that the sun just didn't, like, boil his skin off and he just melted into a big thing of goo on the ground or anything.
Well, that's because he's not a vampire.
True.
Technically, I think he's something between a zombie and a pile of goo. I'm not sure where. He's somewhere between those two things.
He's a zom-goo.
All right, well, Jason, I'm having you on today because you are going to tell us a little bit more of a story you told us at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
And so just to refresh everybody, why don't you tell us what happened first and then give us the update?
Okay, so I remember talking to you guys about this around Christmas time because it happened actually just a little bit around Halloween. And I was going out to take a steampunk version of Alice in Wonderland. And we were going out to these magnificent trees. But to get to these trees and in this woods, you kind of have to go through a really crazy cemetery. It has a lot of bad things that have happened in this place. In fact, I'm surprised that they even let people in there anymore because of the violent things that they've done to the graves that were there. So I go walking through, and out of this huge field, you know, we found the place that has the best looking trees. So we go walking to it, and we have to cut through like a wooden fence. And as we're going across there, I tripped over something.
Now, you're doing a photo shoot, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So I'm like, what the heck did I just trip over? And I looked over there, and it was a little jar. And it was surrounded by other trash. I'm like, why would anybody throw their trash over here? I mean, that is so disrespectful. So I went to go pick it up, and I was going to throw it away on my way out. Thought nothing of it. But when I picked it up, I realized that the jar was empty, but there still was something in it. So I started like shaking around. It was covered in condensation. I really couldn't see it too well. And finally, I leaned it over and a little voodoo doll hits up against the glass.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, I just released the devil. I have to. So, and, you know, everybody else freaking out. I'm like, no, I'll just put it back into the ground. Everything's good. No big deal. And thought nothing of it. And we went and did the shoot. The shoot came out really well. That was about the extent of that entire excursion that we went on. I really thought nothing of it. I just thought it was really interesting that I ran into a voodoo doll. But that's not exactly what happened.
No.
Now, do you remember when I was, we were talking about curses?
Yes.
And I said, I don't believe in them.
I sense a change.
Guess what? I still don't.
No. Darn it. I thought I had you for once.
What I did realize is that the voodoo that was put in to this doll, whatever they were doing, they were trying to curse somebody. But what I ran into was not a curse. What I actually did was by disturbing it, I got a lot of dark spirits angry. And because of that, I may have broken the curse for somebody that it was meant for, but instead I got the wrath of the underworld against me. So everybody kept telling me it's a curse, it's a curse, it's a curse. I'm like, it's not a curse. It's only a curse if it was designed for me. What I realized is that when I learned about it, and I'll tell you how all this came about generally, they don't do financial curses when it comes to voodoo, because the black stuff is really to hinder love and make people miserable. And they don't just go out and say, okay, finances, that's probably the things that's going to affect you. So, and that's what happened to me. And I'll tell you how that all came about in a little bit. But what I ended up doing was I started having this dream. And I know you commented on the dream on my Facebook.
I did.
I was laying down. These words would come about that says, your life is a lie. And if you don't fix it or change it, you will die a lie. Now, that's pretty intense.
That is.
No matter how you say it, it's intense. And I didn't quite understand what this meant. I decided to put it out on Facebook, and I got a lot of different things.
Including myself.
Yeah, and I appreciated every one of them. And one guy PM'd me, private messenger, in case people don't know what that is, on Facebook, and they said, do you have 60 bucks? I'm like, am I getting extorted? I'm like, no, I never thought that. He was a good friend of mine. And he said, are you open-minded? I said, well, yes, and yes, I'm open-minded, and I got 60 bucks. What do you have in mind? He goes, I want you to go see this Native American shaman out in Brooksville. Okay, pretty cool. Yeah, I'm up for it. He goes, now when you go, you don't wear anything, no shirts with team insignias or any sarcastic things, because everybody knows that's what I wear anyways. Very plain clothes, plain shirts, no wedding ring, but I couldn't get my wedding ring off, so I couldn't, I had to go with that on anyways. I also couldn't wear a hat. So I'm like, okay, so I walked in there, she told me my name, and she had me hold a couple of different things for different elements. So one was an element of fire, wind, water, and earth. And as I did that, she just started writing down a whole bunch of stuff all the way across. And she came up with some pretty interesting things, because she told me things about myself that I have never told a living soul. Well, she's definitely got my interest now. So it came down to the point where she goes, I don't know if you've noticed, but on the other side of this house here, where there's like three windows, it's pitch black. And I looked over there and I was like, yeah, it is. It is, isn't it? She goes, well, that's because when you walked in this door, you brought in probably one of the most powerful demons I've run into in a long time.
Oh, wow.
And it knows that you're here to try to take care of it. So it's staying in the back there listening. I'm like, okay, well, that's pretty interesting. She goes, did you have a lot of things happen to you in the last couple months? I'm like, you know, actually, yeah. We're going to be talking about Gladys Goodies here in a little bit, but in November, everybody that had working with me, pretty much with Gladys Goodies, stopped working. I lost a spot that I had up in Brooksville where I actually made pretty good money because of competition. My website got to the point where the server was shut down. There was the AC blew, which cost me a couple $100. I came home from Disney to find my water heater blew, and the whole entire floor got flooded. A lot of other things happened, and it cost me a lot of money really fast. So I was literally like drained, but yet I still didn't even let it bother me, because you know what? That's life. It happens. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of chalked it up, and I was really worried about Gladys Goodies because of all the roadblocks I was running into in just a short amount of time. She goes, you are a stronger person than most people that I know. I saw a guy with a demon that was about half the strength of this come in here. He came crawling in with a cane. He was just completely, he could barely walk. He was torn apart and he wanted to kill himself, and he kept having suicidal thoughts. Once we got rid of that demon, she goes, he actually started getting better, and now he doesn't need his cane anymore. The way, just by talking to you and the way that you're acting, you don't even know you have a demon with you, do you?
Wow.
And she goes, I haven't seen something like that in a long time. I said, no, I didn't. She goes, you are probably one of the strongest persons I've seen. And because of that, this demon can't get at you. So it's trying to attack you in different ways. And ironically, in November is when it started. And as I told you guys, then's when everything started to go weird right afterwards, because it could not physically attack me. And she goes, you have powers. She goes, you have psychic powers, and you have a heart of gold that it can't penetrate. And she goes, if you use that, and I can teach you how to use that, she goes, you would completely blow people's minds. I was like, really? Now, I kind of knew I was a little bit psychic a long time ago, but I didn't know it was to that point. So she goes, let's first clean this demon up and get rid of it. So she takes me into this place. She goes, there's actually a vortex, a heavenly vortex in this house. She goes, it's one of the reasons why we chose it. And she goes, that will literally suck the demon into the Neverworld. And she goes, you're going to probably feel a little woozy and stuff like that because it's going to feel like you're in water. I'm like, well, I feel like that anyways with my MS, so it shouldn't feel anything abnormal. So we went over to this spot. And as she's cleaning this thing out, I can feel all this wind blowing around, and my hair is blowing. I closed my eyes. I saw this red triangle just float around. We were in this vortex for a little bit longer. I started seeing that the triangle shrink in size, and then it went away. And ironically, the minute that it went away, she says to me, she goes, it's gone.
Wow,
that's pretty cool. And I said, you know, that's a nice touch. I see that you got the AC over there. I hate to break this to you, but she goes, that AC does not work. She goes, there's no AC unit outside. I'm like, wow. I said, you don't have any AC in this house at all? She goes, no, I do not. I'm like, wow. Okay. That kind of woke me up a little bit. So that whatever was coming from that wind was from that vortex that I was sitting inside of. So I'm like, well, that's probably one of the coolest experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
And so she got rid of the demon. And ironically, not even a week later, which is, this is only about 3 weeks ago, everything started bouncing back with Gladys Goodies. Everything started bouncing back with my health, with my family's health, and everything else.
Wow. That is an amazing story.
It is. I mean, it really woke me up to things. And I'm kind of glad I got the chance to experience something like that, because if you don't believe in the afterworld and you don't believe that there's a God, it's stuff like that that wakes you up to it. Mm-hmm. And maybe I tripped over this thing because I needed to get that reaffirmed. Maybe I needed that. Maybe that was God's way of bringing me back to Him, because maybe I was too far away. Maybe I wasn't giving enough attention. Maybe I wasn't giving enough time to my roots. And that's really where I started off with, was Christian roots. And that's why I've had so many things going wrong, what I was believing. And it's, you're not supposed to be able to run into demons and all this other kind of stuff in the Christian religion. You're not supposed to see ghosts. You're not supposed to see any of this stuff. And that was always a challenge for me, but I never disbelieved God. But sometimes you just need to be reaffirmed with your faith and what you believe in. And I think that was God's wake-up call for me.
Wow. But it's awesome.
I am really excited for the opportunity to try to tune into these psychic things that I've had for a long time. And ironically, if I had listened to myself, I probably would have not damaged myself as much as I have.
So what do you have plans? Are you going to go back and visit this lady again?
Oh, yeah, I plan on doing it. In fact, as soon as I can get enough money to take the classes that she offers to help people like me, I definitely want to do it. I mean, if it's something that it's a God-given gift that I have, why not use it?
Exactly.
You know, I'm not using it for witchcraft. I'm not using it to change or alter time and space. But if somebody comes to me and they have a legitimate problem and I can tap into it, why not use it to help that person? I would be doing it for the good of people, not the bad of people.
In this business, I've been meeting all kinds of different people. And one of the things that I have come across is that this stuff is real. There is something going on out there. And as we are traveling on this thing called life, the veil is getting thinner and thinner. And I think we're heading to a headlong explosion at some point. More and more people are becoming aware of the spiritual side of our universe.
Yeah.
This has been an interesting conversation, Jason.
It has been. I mean, it was an eye-opener for me then, and it's still kind of an eye-opener for me. And you know, it was what I think was really a good positive thing for me out of this whole thing. I mean, the whole thing was positive, but this really reaffirmed it. And she goes, there's a number two that follows you around. She goes, I don't quite know why, but she goes, that usually happens with twins. And she said that, she goes, I have a feeling that you have a twin, but you don't have a twin. I said, you're right. I was told that I was a twin and that the twin died at birth. That she's not the first person that told me that, but she is the second person to say it. Also helping me rectify the stuff that's happened to me in the past was true, and the person that I was talking to really knew their stuff as well. So That made me feel better about all that stuff too.
Well, you mentioned Gladys Goodies. Let's talk about that for a minute. I know you sent me an email saying that one of the listeners out there from somewhere, someone in Washington, bought some goodies from you online, and it sounds like things are going pretty good over there again.
They did. And you know what? That was the first thing that happened right after I got rid of that demon. And that came almost like 2 days later. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I'm really excited about it because it shows that, you know, things work. And that's the first sale I've ever had in Washington. So that made me feel really, really good. And I just can't wait for this thing to grow up because, like I said, it's not about necessarily making money. I mean, that's something I have to do because I got to support my family and stuff. But I also want it to be a positive thing for animals. And I want to be able to do some amazing things with this company by using the platform that I've made to also educate people about animals and their health and be more vigilant about what we're giving these poor animals that we don't realize that's in their food. There's a lot of stuff that's going on with Gladys Goodies that's more than just a sale. But all these sales not only help me support my family and my dogs, but I'm also trying to give back and use that money to further education about animals and help unfortunate animals along the way. And I can only do that with money, unfortunately. So that's something we're trying to work for going into 2019 here.
Well, how do we get Gladys Goodies if we want to buy them? Tell us all about that.
Well, you can go to gladysgoodies.com, and it's gladysgoodies.com. It's a secure link. You don't have to worry about it. I do have high encryption on it. There's a lot of cool things that you can get on there. You can get all different types of treats that Glady can have because Glady got sick. Because we gave her a treat that actually had ethylene glycol as one of the ingredients that we didn't look at. That's a whole other story. So now she can't eat anything but real, lean, natural treats. And that's what these are. So we make them for our dog. We have toys. We have all kinds of stuff up there. If you go there and use the code RONS, R-O-N-S, that gets you a percentage off and helps support Ron's Amazing Stories. So that will help Ron's Amazing Stories as well, too. And I'm really excited to be able to do that for you as well.
And the response that I've been getting back from people, you don't get to hear it, but people have liked the idea of promoting something good. A lot of podcasts are going to promote some, let's just be honest, not so nice things.
Yeah.
And being able to promote something that's healthy for dogs and now I know the entire vision. I think that that's great, and we'll continue to support you as long as you'll keep us around.
So we're just really excited to be able to support you as well, because you're a friend of us, I'm a friend of you, and we got to work together. And if we can spread good stuff around, however that may be, telling amazing stories or positive stories or not stories about some of the junk you see on television today, and they're wholesome stories. And if we just do things to change the world a little bit at a time, those are the people I want to work with. And I'm very thankful to be able to partner up with you and your podcast.
Okay. Give us that website one more time, would you, Jason?
It's gladysgoodies.com. And use the promo code when you check out, RONS, R-O-N-S. And it will get you a pretty sweet little discount.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thanks for your time today. That is an amazing story you've shared with us. We have tentative plans to do the next Horror Express, but nothing in stone yet. But we're still working on it.
Well, you know, we are on the train going to Florida.
Yep, that's right.
Well, I don't know if you know, but there was a count from the 1920s, not a Dracula, but he was considered a count, and he lived in Key West. And he did some pretty crazy things with dead people.
Oh, my.
Since we're in Florida, we might as well just talk about this, because this isn't the first time it's happened.
So you're saying we should have a show on the Count of Florida?
We could have an experience of what sick obsessions have done that have actually desecrated graves and everything else across the United States.
I'm in. The scarier, the better, I say.
Oh, this one will scare the crap out of you, especially if you see the pictures.
All right. Well, then, folks, you heard it here. We have planned part of the show right now, and we'll have that for you coming up soon. That's all we'll say.
I think that's a plan.
All right. Well, thank you, Jason. I think we're rounding Florida, so why don't you just jump off, and I'll head back home.
Sounds good.
Good luck. Oh, and don't forget to put yourself... Oh, he forgot to put himself in a mailbag. That's gonna hurt. That's gonna leave a mark. Bye, Jason. Well, I hope you enjoyed this mini edition of The Horror Express, and we hope to bring you a full version soon enough. Sounds like we got one creepy topic to talk about. If you want to hear or binge listen to the other 21 episodes of The Horror Express, head to ronsamazingstories.com and click on the Episodes tab in the upper right corner. There you will see the category listings, and the Horror Express playlist is found there. And now we head back to Ron's Amazing Stories. The podcast for this time. Come back next week for more good stuff. I want to thank Brian Kano, Angela Imbrie, and Jason Dowd for taking part in the show today. It was a whole lot of fun. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you'll find every link you'll need. Don't forget to leave reviews and feedback about the show. It really does help us to grow. Take a minute on whatever service you use. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.